This is Nomad Penguin calling in from Mount Kosciuszko, and you're listening to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we get an update on the mega event down in Wagga, we give you a tip on keeping moisture out of your geocaches, and we open up the debate on cache versus cache. All that and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 55 of GeoTalk for January 2010. Now, I'm giving the months because throughout this year, we're going to make the podcast a monthly podcast. So at the start of each month, usually around the first weekend of the month, you will consistently get GeoTalk delivered into your iTunes or whatever aggregator you're using. And if we ever get more content in between shows, we'll put out a special show in sort of mid-month or something like that. But anyway, we're here for January. Happy New Year to all the geocaches around the country, in Australia and New Zealand and around the world. I hope you all had a great break. You probably spent a lot of it doing geocaching. I managed to get my numbers back up again. We travelled down to Melbourne for Christmas, and as you do when you're travelling down the freeway, you have to stop here or there, and just so happens a geocache happens to be on the side of the road where you stop. So we got our numbers up, and we actually passed the magic 1400. Yes, it is about the numbers for some of us. Depends on what number you're after and how competitive you are and so forth. While we're down in Melbourne, a big thank you to Ian and Penny for organising another great event, Intervening Days 2. It's surprising how many sort of geocaches sort of stay around. They don't go travelling in between Christmas and New Year. Obviously, they go at other times of the year. And once again, it was a good turnout at that event. I think it was on the 27th of December. So thanks very much for that. Also, on the way down and on the way back, we stayed in Wagga Wagga, which is the venue for the big mega event, which is happening in Easter this year. Can say this year now. It's less than 3 months away. And on the way back, we actually caught up with Roosterman, Greg, who's one of the organisers of the mega event. And you'll hear that interview very soon as we talk about, raise some of the questions that I've been asked and many people have asked about the mega event that's coming up in a few months' time. On our way down to Melbourne and on the way back, I used a piece of software called Cachebox, which is for the Windows mobile platform. And I can tell you, it's a great piece of software. What it is able to do is you can take a GPX file that you either get as your Pocket Query or you export out of GSAC, and then you can upload it onto your phone or onto your sort of Pocket PC device. It also uses OpenStreetMap, so if you want to connect live via your 3G network, you can download OSM maps so that you can get a little more context of where the caches are. But it also allows you to save field notes. You can look through previous notes. It's got all that functionality that you expect out of a geocaching sort of program. And I think it goes a little bit further. And for the price, which is free, it's a fantastic bit of software. Now, you can download it from www.getcachebox.net. So that's getcachebox.net. And try it out for yourself. I think it's a fantastic bit of software. And if you're on the Windows mobile platform, one that you should definitely have on your device. Over the Christmas New Year period, Groundspeak released another app for the iPhone. It's called Hidden Treasures. It cost, I think, from memory, $2.99, and I downloaded it onto Nay's iPhone, and I've had a little bit of a play with it. It's in its very basic form at the moment, but what it does is it uses waymarking categories. So we've all been wondering, those of us who are into waymarking, where this is going to lead. Well, this seems to be one of the apps that they've spun out of it, and they've used a limited number of waymarking categories. Most of them are geared towards North America, but there certainly are a number that apply here in Australia. Of course, there's not that many that have been populated in those categories here down under. So searching in Melbourne, I think I found there's probably about half a dozen. In Sydney, there's a dozen points. What it does is it shows you the nearest ones to your current location and then how far it is to get to them. It doesn't do any routing. All it does is sort of show you a compass and the straight line direction to that. You can't do any logging online, but it certainly takes you to those places. So it would be interesting to see how that progresses over the next few versions. But that's Hidden Treasures iPhone application. I'll give you a link in the show notes at geotalkpodcast.com. Now, another event that I recently travelled to was up in Newcastle in the new year, and that was held by the Havoc Caches group, and it was a great get-together. Thanks very much to Mix for organising that. We had a web guy and I travelled up the F3 from Sydney, a two-hour drive up to Newcastle, and we caught up with some of the local caches there, and Neil decided to hang back under the shelter while I went out with Big Matt and Shell and the Bronze and his son, and we went looking for nuggets of gold that were hidden away throughout the park. It was a lot of fun. It was a really good experience, and congratulations to Mix once again for organising that fantastic event. Of course, it's a new year, it's a new decade, and it's time to set up a new caching resolution. Did you fulfil your resolution for 2009? I know I did. My resolution last year was not to put any calls to help while I was out in the field. If I couldn't find it while I was out there, bad luck, it was a DNF, and it wasn't until I got back home and maybe caught up with some people that I might discuss it a little bit further. But I nearly gave in back in October. I was stuck on one particular one, but I decided to throw in the towel and go DNF. So that I succeeded in 2009. 2010, I've got a new one. I noticed that if a lot of us use GSAC and we use some of the macros, and there's one in particular that's called Fine Stats Gen. I think that's how you pronounce it. And, you know, it provides all the different statistics and so forth. And if you haven't used it and you're using GSAC, find out about this macro. It's a really good macro. It sort of gives you a whole list of statistics about your geocaching habits. And one of the new stats that it provides is finds by found date. And I've decided to set myself a challenge using this. Now, what it does, it gives you a grid. It has 12 rows of each of the months, and then it has, you know, 31 columns, and it shows you the days in which you have been geocaching. And I found that I've been caching about 80% of the year. Over the last 6 years, I've managed to find a cache on just about every date. Now, of course, December 25, for some strange reason, I haven't found a cache on. And I haven't found a cache on April 9, which happens to be someone's birthday in this family anyway. So my challenge this year is to try and fill out that grid. So in January, the 7th of January, I hadn't found a cache. Well, I did that during the week. And I've got another one coming up on the 17th of January to fill up that one. The one with the most gaps in it seems to be July. No surprise, it's the coldest month of the year in Australia. I've got 11 that I have to do there. So that was a bit of a challenge. I know Rags, Rough as Guts, 4x4, one of my friends, he's set himself the same challenge. He's got a lot less to go. I think he's in the mid-90s, so he's only got a handful of dates to fill out, and I think he's going to finish it before I do. So anyway, what's your resolution? If you've got a resolution for 2010, call it through on the GeoTalk hotline. That's 02-800-50-436. That's 800-50-436, or drop us an email, geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. And one final bit of news, earth caching. If you're into earth caching, you've been trying to set one up, you probably know that for the past 6 weeks or thereabouts, we haven't been able to enter them in because earth caching have moved their submission process from their own website into Groundspeak's website. Now, Groundspeak are taking a bit of time making sure that all that extra, you know, fields of information that you need to put in work. And so hopefully in the next release that they do any time now, it will include earth caching. So if you've been waiting to put in an earth cache, it shouldn't happen, should not be too far from now, but we'll certainly find it's a lot easier to put them in. Two things that are also happening, there's been a lot of debate over whether vacation earth caches will still be allowed. The answer from GeoAware, the organizer of earth caching, is yes, that will still be allowed. You will be allowed to hide or to create earth caches that are outside your sort of normal sphere. So if you go overseas and you decide to create one, you can still do that. But there will be some restrictions placed on distance from other earth caches so that, you know, we don't end up with too many sort of similar ones at the one location. But GeoAware does point out that there will be some flexibility in that. Well, that leads us into the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, and it's all about earth caching. And which Australian or New Zealand geocacher has found the most earth caches? And I'll give you the list for each state as well. See if you can come up with the answer. I'll give them to you at the end of the podcast.
Well, it's less than 100 days to go, and I'm sitting here with Greg Brown, one of the organisers of the Oz Mega Wagga Wagga event here in the host city of Wagga Wagga. Thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
No worries. Thank you, Darren.
Now, less than 100 days to go. How's it all coming together?
Well, it's getting pretty big. We've had a lot of planning and a lot of organising. And yes, we have taken a while to get the registration going, but we're absolutely pleased the registration's going as good as it is. We've got lots of registrations coming in already, and it is pretty fantastic.
Right. And numbers-wise, how are you going with that?
In the will attends, we've probably got something like 600 people already saying they will attend, and the registration with less than a week already, we've got something like 200 people already saying they will come and definitely registering to go. So I think we'll hit the 600 by the next few weeks or through January, and we'll be definitely a mega for sure.
Okay, so it's really important that those people who listed that they will be attending go through that registration process. It's now open.
Absolutely. They need to keep an eye on the forum, on the rivcase.com page. There's a blog there now. But we definitely need the registrations to be confirmed and the will attends. If they register, make sure they've also still put a will attend. We're all keeping an eye on the numbers in the will attends. We still need to keep that number up so that we can have a mega status.
Yeah, now, because I was going to say that the numbers are very important. I mean, one of the reasons for this get-together, I mean, apart from the fact that it's going to be great to get caches from around the country, you know, zeroing in on Wagga, is for people to, some of them, the motivation is to get that mega event icon on their status. Now, what's the story there? Because you've got 600 will attend, but we've noticed that it's still listed as an event. Is there a problem at the moment, or is there a process that you have to go through?
No, absolutely. There's a requirement that GC.com, Groundspeak have, that they don't always and they don't very often allow the mega status before an event. It does often come after an event, and we have heard that. We are aware of that. We are asking for a special consideration, and all that's pretty top secret, so it's just between you and me, Darren, at this stage. But if we get enough more will attends and we get all the registrations coming in all through January, it's very likely that we could ask for that special approval, but it's up to Groundspeak totally. And it may not come till afterwards, but that's fine. If it does come afterwards, it will still be a mega. Guaranteed, we'll have a big social event no matter what, and we get 500 or 600 people there, it'll be just perfect.
Right. So if we do get the numbers, even if the icon's not there on the weekend, if we hit the 500 mark, then there's no reason why Groundspeak wouldn't give us the status.
Absolutely. And right. We may have to send proof later that we had 500 people there, and of course we'll have a big photo and everyone will want to be in that.
Yeah.
And there won't be any trouble, but it may still be a week or so afterwards. Once you log your attendance, they still can change it to a mega and you'll still get that icon. Yeah, absolutely, because I want one.
All right, so now the registration, you opened that up about a week ago. You said you've had about 200. Now, what's the process that you have to go through to register?
Look, it's very simple. There is a form. If you have a look on the website, www.rivcase.com, and you'll put a link there for us, won't you, Darren? Very good. Thanks for all your support so far with all your podcasts. There is a simple form and it flows through pretty basic, straightforward. You can either do PayPal payments or direct deposit at the end. It will also then take you to the merchandise section where we ask people if they want to buy some merchandise, please pre-order it. We still have to order the stock and we will need pre-orders for merchandise. If we don't get enough pre-orders, we actually may not have any extras left over on the weekend. So you might get there and everyone's wearing their nice mega shirt and you might not be able to get one. So please pre-order those to get them. Then there's also a food order section. You will need to pre-order the meals for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, definitely on there. And it's very simple to order. We've had orders come through already, which is great. But we will need to give numbers to the caterers well before the event. So you must pre-order for those.
Now, there's a $30 registration fee. Tell us, what does that cover?
All right. Well, firstly, you will get a very special Oz Mega Geo coin. That's a fairly major part. You'll get entry into all the competitions, and there is plenty. There is plenty of prizes. We've got lots of great sponsors already, so plenty of good prizes. Entertainment, both Saturday and Sunday nights now. Fireworks on one of the nights. You've got Sunday morning helicopter drop, and that'll be fairly exciting. We've got an Easter egg hunt for the kids, and all that'll be very exciting, as well as a very good welcome pack from Wagga Wagga, all the information about Wagga Wagga and the surrounds. So it's fairly comprehensive. However, I will add that there will be a late registration fee, so please get in and register early, because once we have to cut some of that off, there will actually be a late registration fee, and that's advertised on the page, so early registration is much preferable.
And I presume that those who don't register just won't be able to get in on the weekend.
Look, we haven't cut off an absolute definite, but we'd not like anyone to miss out. But if accommodation fills up very quickly, and it could, if we have a lot of trouble there, we'd hate to have someone miss out. So early is the best preference.
Okay. Now, volunteers, you're looking for volunteers for this event, and if people are willing to put their hand up, what sort of things are you getting them to do, and how can they get in touch with you?
Yes, look, there's a contact page on the website for volunteers to send us some information, and we'll put them on a list. At the moment, we're preparing a list. We'll have them helping us with the setup sometimes. Some will be there the day before. We'll be setting up for a few days beforehand. There'll be some that can help us with the registration. There can be some help us with car parking. We do know there'll be a bit of a crowd coming in with car parking, so we'll have to be careful with all of that. But it's all being planned, it's all being carefully looked after. We hope it all goes very smoothly.
Okay. Now, if people want to keep up to date with what's going on in the lead up to the event, I believe you've got a blog on the website.
Yeah, so there is a link there, and we'll hope to be now giving much more regular updates to people, especially leading up in that month leading up, so that keep an eye on the blog and you'll see what's happening there anyway.
Okay. Now, one quick question regarding caches around Wagga. I've done a few over the last, yesterday and last week when I was on the way through. There's a lot of micros. I mean, there's a lot of caches around here. What's going to happen to those caches on the weekend? I mean, are there any plans on is there going to be someone with a new log sheet every time, every hour, filling them up? Because it's going to be quite a lot of work, isn't it?
Yes. So we've started some plans with that as well. We're hoping that most of them will be available. There is some in some fairly high muggle area, so some of them may be difficult to leave available over the mega event weekend with 10 or 20 cars pulling up at the once. It could be very difficult. So some may not be available, but there is still plenty that should be.
And I presume that the local authorities, the council and the police are aware that there's going to be this influx of people, you know, walking around looking for secret stashes around town.
Yeah, the Wagga City Council have been very supportive. You can see they are one of our sponsors. Should give a plug to all our sponsors. You should also have a look at all our sponsors' page. We've got a great lot of sponsors already, and that's continuing to grow, which is just fantastic. Wagga City Council, and yes, we'll have the police also all ready, but I think most of the entertainment happening at night out at the campsite is a bit out of town. We've made it intentionally a bit out of town so that it wasn't in town to create public interest from the muggle factor.
Yeah.
So we are a bit out of town, and that's where most people will be congregating on the Saturday and the Sunday nights, and so without too much trouble, it will be just one big social event at the nights, and there might not be too many people wandering around town in the middle of the night anyway, although I don't doubt a couple might.
And final question, 2011, first of all, are you guys likely to put your hand up, and if not, what would you say to anyone who's thinking of holding this event sometime next year?
Yes, I think we would probably allow someone else to do the next one. It is a lot of work. We don't doubt that. We have no trouble with doing it. We think another year in a row might be a bit more than we're all ready for. So definitely someone else wants to get a start on it, they can possibly contact us, but someone should start some planning now. We've had a year and 3 months to do ours. We've now got 3 months to go. So I would suggest very strongly, if someone did want to get one started for 2011, that they should get started very soon. They've got that 3 months lead up and another full year as well, and that would be what they really would need. I'd highly recommend it.
I've been told by my other half, if I put my hand up, I'm going to get shot. So it's not likely to come from Geo Talk anyway. Hey, look, Greg, you've done a fantastic amount of work. You and the committee, I've seen a lot of what you've been doing and following it quite closely. I think it looks like it's going to be an excellent event. So it's 4 months out, not even that, or just 3 months out now. I'm sure those people who haven't registered, get on the website now. It's rivcache.com, that's R-I-V-C-A-C-H-E, and register your intention to be there, along with getting onto the listing, and make sure that you put your will attend there. Greg, I hope to see you again in a few months' time. I'm sure you'll be busy running around, but it should be a lot of fun and a lot of caches in the area. Good luck.
Good. Thanks, Darren. Thanks again for your support. We've got a very big committee. We're all very supportive. There is lots of us working hard behind the scenes. But if anyone does have a query, don't hesitate to send an email to our admin email and we'll try and answer it as soon as we can.
Thank you.
No worries.
To travel around the country now and have a look at some of the events that are occurring in the month of January. On the 17th of January, it's My Birthday by Kinnell One, and that's being held in Balan out in Western Victoria. On the 23rd of January, Another Day by the Seaside by Shane and Jossie over in Port Elliot in South Australia. And on the 24th of January, the Gippsland Get Together by Trunk Snouts, I think that is, or Trunken Snouts. That's in Churchill in Victoria over near the Latrobe Valley. Apologies to Mick from Newcastle for saying Team Casho instead of Team Casho in the last one. But hey, rather than me pronounce your names, why don't you call in and promote your own event? So if you've got an event coming up, give us a call on the GEO Talk hotline or drop us an email and we'll read it out for you. It's time now for another geocaching tip, and we're going to cross the ditch over to New Zealand and have a listen to Radio Nut 50 with another tip on how to keep your caches dry.
Hi there from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand. I have a caching tip. This one is for cache places. I'd like to suggest that when preparing a cache, you should avoid round containers. I'm sure this will not be universally supported, but after finding a couple of thousand stashes, I base this on the following reasons. Most round containers leak. I know that many caches in the West Island of Oz don't see water falling from the sky as often as us here in the main country, but water ingress is one of the most common problems with caching around here, and screw-top containers typically must be tightened down very hard to close whatever sealing gland they have. When using the popular Systema containers, the round versions have a simple flat sealing washer that is not entirely waterproof. The rectangular type have a seal that's held between two ridges, forming a sort of double seal that's much more effective. Secondly, most round containers, especially plastic bottles, have a narrower neck than their body, so when withdrawing the logbook, it rubs hard on the rim and the thread, which often tears the bag. The number of cases we've found that have shredded plastic bags that have worn out against the rim of a round container is high, and often the log is very wet and soggy as the lid does not seal. So although there are exceptions, and realizing that plastic bottles are a low-cost container option, for good weatherproof containers, stick to the rectangular food sealing containers. They really do seal better. And of course, it's difficult to get past a real ammo can for a great weatherproof and robust box.
time now to reach into the GeoTalk mailbag, and there's certainly a few letters in this particular one. First of all, Jeremy, a.k.a. Noikmeister, gives a reply to a question that was from last episode, and that was, how far do you clear from your home, sort of, you know, that caching radius that you create? Jeremy says that he starts with the map, the Google map that you start off with on Groundspeak when you click on the Map It for caches around your area, and make sure he clicks ticks away the ones that he's found, and he tries to clear out that area and then goes one zoom out, and he's currently working on the third zoom out, which he estimates to be about 3 kilometers. But unfortunately, he says at the moment he's stuck because he's got a difficulty 5 puzzle, and he's also got a Where I Go cache, and he doesn't have the tools to help him do that one. But anyway, that's what he does. Another email from Thomas Koenig Dick Bornch from over in Germany. He says he's written a program called MopSoz, and he thinks it's a great tool that you can use to help you solve some of those mystery puzzles and so forth when you're out in the field. He's given an address for that. He'd like people to try it out. Most of it is in German, but he'd be happy to convert some of that to English. Go to MopSoz, so that's MOPSOS.net, and give that a go. Try that out. That's for the Windows mobile platform, by the way. Also an email from Zelga Iath. I hope I pronounced that. Zelga Iath, or Ath. Iath, also known as James. He said he was just logging in a small caching feat that he pulled off the other day that he reckons even Macamob may not have done. He said that he did a caching run around the Sydney CBD the other day and logged 17 finds, which is nothing special. But in those finds, he found a traditional, including shallow depth, and guns, lots of guns, one of the Matrix series, which is, I agree, a nasty nano. He also found a multi. He found a virtual, a mystery, and he's also just been got approval for the Earth cache at Sydney Harbour Bridge, and that makes 5 different caches. So he, there you go. He says he's got to be happy with that, and he said he found the program through the Axis of Evil caches, and he's listened to all the episodes since episode 1. You poor man. I hope you get therapy afterwards. But there's a question. How many different types have you found in a 24-hour period? I think there's about 10 or 11 that you can do in total, but we'd be hard-pressed to do them all. Anyway, be interested to hear from you. And finally, we're going to open up a bit of a debate here, courtesy of John Plummer, who writes in. He says, Darren, being somewhat of a grumpy old man, I like to see and hear things correctly. Well, I'm agreeing with you there as well, John. And he'd like to point out that I might be pronouncing the word geocache incorrectly. And he says, according to the Australian Macquarie Dictionary, there is the definition for cache or cache is a hiding place, especially one in the ground for provisions or treasure, a store of provisions, so hidden, a store of food collected by some animals for winter, or to put something in a cache, as when you use it in a verb. Now, in those particular instances, it's pronounced as cache. And the only time that you actually pronounce it as cache, according to the Australian Macquarie Dictionary, is when you're referring to either cache memory or you're referring to computers and the verb of, you know, caching something in the cache memory. So he's saying that maybe we're pronouncing it the wrong way. If we're referring to a container, we should be pronouncing it as cache. Well, here's the debate. I'm opening it to you. So I want you to call into the GeoTalk hotline at 02-850-436. So that's 800-506-536, and I want you to tell me how you pronounce the word geocache or geocache and why. Now, I've got 5 path tags to give away. They're 5 Geocaching Australia path tags, and we'll also give a special prize, a random draw, to one person, a gold GeoTalk coin. And we'll also give those away. So you've just got to call in, tell us how you pronounce it, who you are, and why you pronounce it that particular way. You've got till the end of the month to get your calls in, until January 31st. So hit the phone and tell us whether you pronounce it as cash or cache. And speaking of hitting the phones, here's a few phone calls that we've got. First of all, we've got a call from Darth Trader in the Upper Hunter Valley.
Well, it's Darth Trader trying to find Hillview. Put up here, boy, have a go. It's an FDS, no one's found it yet, and I'm having a go. Have a go. But there's a lot of rubbish around here. These Musselbrook folk come up here for some unwholesome activities by the looks of it, so I'm trying to avoid getting rubbish where I don't want rubbish. I'm wearing my best geocaching thongs, but it's a small container, and I'm looking for. But amongst all this stuff up here, I still can't find it. I'm wandering around. I've had a phone call from the wife down on the in the mud there, waiting for me to come back. Starting to get frustrated, and the flies are starting to inhabit the car. So I'm have to give this only another couple of minutes. Lots of good hidey holes here there is. Have a go. Got to give me that. What's this? It's the back of a guitar. Why would that be up here? Okay, I'll keep looking. For that one, I've actually had the go, and I've come up with a DNF. I would like to have spent longer there. Get to the point where you're getting frustrated and you're not finding it, start pulling rocks and rubbish apart. But for the sake of my marriage, I'm going to have to run back down the hill. This is the one I really wanted to do, and I've come up with the DNF. So sad. Anyway, I'll be back here probably a week after next, and hopefully it's still available then. I'll have a shot again. Okay. Thanks, GeoTalk, for a good show. And I'll get back on the road and suffer a bit of a ear blast on the way. It's Darth Trader calling in. It's been about 5 days since I tried to get this first to find with Hillview in Musselbrook. I'm back in town for some work and decided after dinner to have a go with got a bit of a sunset happening, but can't really see it for the weather. And jumped the car out up here today. There's no wife to tell me that I can't drive up the hill, and I've made it up the hill. So I've jumped out of the car and put my hand straight on it. So I'm so annoyed I didn't get FDF. Two people have found it in the last 4 days. It's quite a nice little cache. Also tried one about 15 kilometres away from where I'm standing this evening too, the Mount Arthur Summit, and that is well worth a visit.
Well, Stealth Ninja Penguin and me, Nomad Penguin, have just made it to the top of Mount Kosciuszko, and we've just spent the last hour looking unsuccessfully for the cache Kosciuszko Tops, which is GCNEFX. We lined up where we thought it was using the GPS and the photos, but we just couldn't find it. But what we did do was hopefully find all the requirements for the Mount Kosciuszko Earth Cache. And so when we finally logged that one, I think that'll be find number 1886 for us. We just think the views are absolutely stunning from up here, and fortunately or unfortunately, we've been sharing them with 100 other people as well. Stealth Ninja Penguin and I have really been enjoying the show, and we've listened to every episode, so keep up the good work. All right, bye.
Yeah, g'day gurus, it's the Bonds here, just ringing up to say thanks very much for Mix for organising the Havoc event over the new year at the New Lambton Brick Pit. It was fantastic catching up with all the teams, and let me say congratulations to Spindoc and Big Mick and Shell for joining us and pointing the way to finding all that gold. Fantastic. Have a great new year, guys. Hooray.
Thank you to all our callers for putting in a call to the GeoTalk hotline. It's really great to hear your voices, and it helps make the podcast a little more special, hearing from people around the country. Now, everyone who puts in a call or sends in an email goes into a draw to win a voucher from Geocache Australia Store. And thank you very much once again to Aaron and Zoe for supporting the podcast and giving us the voucher. If you want to check out what they've got for sale online, go to geocachestore.com.au. There's lots of great ideas, you know, from cache containers to geo coins to little bits of swag and even ready-to-go kits and GPS units. You can even get those online as well. So check that out at geocachestore.com.au. And the winner for this particular episode for the month of January is Nomad Penguin. Thanks very much for putting in your call from the top, from the roof of Australia on Mount Kosciuszko. You've got until the end of the month to give us your contact details, and we'll send out that voucher into them in the mail for you. All right, well, that's just about it for this episode of Geo Talk. Before we go, we better give you the answer to the trivia question. And the question was, which Australian or New Zealand geocacher has found the most number of earthcaches? And the answer to that is the Wonder Stuff from the North Island of New Zealand. They've found 64 earthcaches, which is just amazing. I didn't think there were that many in Australia and New Zealand. Obviously, they've travelled around a little bit. Around the rest of the country, the leaders for each state. In the South Island of New Zealand, it's Moneydork with 42. In Queensland is JM Project with 15. In New South Wales, it's Steba with 24. In the ACT, Sol de Lune has found the most, along with Gemalong and Family. They've both found 13 earthcaches. In Victoria, it's McAddies with 45. In Tasmania, Team Swampy has found 12 earthcaches. South Australia, Adrian Mack and O'Cholio with 21 earthcaches. WA, Oztrackers with 14. And in the Northern Territory, Grig88 has found 3. So they top the list. I'll give you a list of the full sort of top three for each state. Put together, I should mention, by Caught at Work down in Melbourne. Thanks very much for churning through the stats and pulling those numbers together. If you want to see the full list, I'll put it up as a log entry on the GeoTalk website. So you can go to geotalkpodcast.com and you can check out that full list of earthcaches around the country. All right, well, that's it for this particular episode. In next episode, we're going to take a look at path tags in the lead up to the Oz Mega event and what is the fascination with them, and also play your thoughts on cache versus cache. Don't forget, give your pronunciation on the GeoTalk hotline, 02800 50 436. Love to hear from you. Until next time, safe geocaching.